Joining us this morning, live in our studios and ready to talk to you, is Democratic Senator Mazie Hirono. She's the first Asian-American woman elected to the Senate, the first U.S. senator born in Japan, and for almost 40 years, she's served Hawaii's voters, first in the State House of Representatives, later as lieutenant governor, and as a member of the U.S. House of Representatives. You know, she recently battled cancer and has come back feistier than ever. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you doing? I can't believe it's been 2 years since you were first diagnosed.
Surprise diagnosis. I'm doing fine, you know. Right now, I'm being monitored. So after two major surgeries and immunotherapy, I'm being monitored regularly.
Yes, and this was a battle with kidney cancer.
Kidney cancer, yes.
But you're in fine shape.
Yes, it hasn't slowed me down, no.
You know, folks have said that your voice has come back, you know, stronger than ever, because you really have nothing to lose. You're in a position. We've got a situation in, in our nation's capital now. Things are very divisive, but you have really come out to talk about issues that are really important to you.
These are not normal times, and we have a president who is very divisive, and he lies. How terrible it is to say this about the president, that we have a president who lies every single day. And the kind of policies that he implements, challenging the Affordable Care Act and all the anti-immigrant things that he continues to impose, including, by the way, public charge that's going to impact a lot of people in Hawaii, all those things. So this is a time for me and everyone else, as far as I'm concerned, to raise our voices and let people know what harm is happening in our country. As far as I'm concerned, these are not normal times. Frankly, some people have heard me swear once in a while. And if you're not moved to swearing once in a while, you're not paying attention.
You know, we just heard a promo with someone talking about, you know, it's time to choose to support what you believe in, you know, taking a stand. And that's what's happened, I think, with this administration. It challenges you, right? What do you believe in?
That's right. And so there's a lot more talk about the values that our country has. And people are asking ourselves, what do we stand for? I mean, are we the country that invites people into our country? Do we support diversity? Do we support strength and diversity? We have a president who is very much against immigrants coming here, from minority immigrants. And just in so many ways, he attacks the environment, all of these things. And what's really great for me to hear is that I hear from people who say their 70, 80-year-old mothers in particular are becoming very engaged and enraged, actually, with what's going on. So they watch the news and all of that, and they are having their voices heard. And the other, to me, encouraging part is all the young people who are coming forward. We had DACA. You know, 800,000 DACA participants. No, they cannot vote, but I would want them to be on a path to citizenship. And they were in the Capitol in Washington, D.C., to advocate for the continuation of DACA by the thousands. These are going to be engaged people. And then, of course, all the young people who came forward for gun safety laws, common sense gun safety laws. You even had scientists marching in Washington, D.C. That's never happened before. You have teachers going on strike all across the country because they really believe in quality public education. We have an education secretary who doesn't believe in public schools. That's Betsy DeVos.
So it's easy for you to stand up because you see all these things happening.
I think it's important. It's important to raise our voices. And so I take the opportunity. I'm glad that I have the opportunity to point out and to very much disagree with the president's priorities and policies that harm our families and our communities.
You mentioned the public charge issue. Explain to our listeners what we're dealing with here.
The public charge rule is a new rule that is going to be implemented by this administration. And what the effect of this will be, that it will be much harder for people to come to our country because they will be asked certain questions, such as, you know, whether we think that these people are going to end up accessing public services like Medicaid or housing, et cetera, without realizing that the people who come to our country legally, they cannot access public services for 5 years. It's not as though everybody comes into our country and get on welfare. That's not what's happening, what happens at all. So this public charge rule will make it a lot harder for people to come into our country, and it will also make it a lot harder for people who are already in our country to get their green cards or to change their status to become citizens. Because they will be asked questions such as, have you ever used, have you ever accessed Medicaid? Or have you ever had housing help? And so what's happening is, and I talk with folks on Maui, the Maui Economic Opportunity people, and they have thousands of clients. They said about 85% of their clients on Maui will be impacted negatively by this rule. People are very afraid to access the services that they paid for through their taxes.
And I believe here in Hawaii, it's like 1 in 5 are immigrants?
1 in 5 are immigrants, and 1 in 3 are either immigrants or children of immigrants. So the children of the immigrants are very afraid that their parents at this point may be deported because they've accessed public services.
So what do you plan to do about it?
I do have a bill that I'll be introducing when I return to the Senate that will prevent the use of any resources to implement the public charge rule.
And so what kind of support do you think you're going to get?
I'm sure I'll get the support of the Democrats, but it is all the Republicans who continue to support this president. Hardly any of them raise any concerns about what the president is doing. And so we will continue to push forward, because I think that at a time like this, the Democrats need to continue to be the loyal opposition. That is not to say, Catherine, that I don't work with the Republicans on the Senate. I have a number of bills that have been enacted into law that have been co-sponsored by Republicans. So there are a number of issues that I can work with my Republican colleagues on. But on some of the biggest issues that impact all of us, such as health care, such as immigration, it's very divisive, and the Republicans stick with the president. You know, one of the harmful things I have to say, remember when we had the government shutdown? And we had a month of people working for the federal government who didn't get paid, two paychecks. Mitch McConnell could have brought a bill to the floor of the Senate to end the government shutdown legislatively. Yes, it would have taken the president to sign it into law, but we are a separate branch of government. The House had already passed a bill that would keep government open. And Mitch McConnell refused to bring that House passed bill to the Senate floor, which it would have passed. He refused to do it because he kept saying, well, the president's not going to sign it. Really, that would be on the president if he wanted to keep hundreds of thousands of public employees without getting any pay. So there are things that we should be doing that should be separate from whatever we think the president's position is, because he changes his mind all the time.
You know, and you've reached out across the aisle. You have spoken publicly about how many of your colleagues reached out to you in
yes.
compassion when you had your health care challenges,
yes.
and that you approached them and said, where is your compassion for some of these issues?
That is the thing. I had just had my second surgery, I believe, and I was back on the floor of the Senate. It was a very dramatic night when the House had already passed under Republican control to repeal the Affordable Care Act. And so that bill was before the Senate, and it was a late night session. And when I had my cancer diagnosis, I got messages and letters from so many of my colleagues, including my Republican colleagues, who shared with me some of their health stories from experiences from their own families. And they showed me a lot of compassion. So that evening when I gave my remarks on the floor of the Senate, I said, you know, you showed me compassion, you showed me care, empathy. Where's all that tonight? As they were poised to do away with the Affordable Care Act and eliminating health care, just really with that one vote, health care for over 20 million people in our country. And yet they voted to do that. The only thing that saved it was John McCain's very dramatic vote. And that bill was stopped by one vote on the Senate floor.
Can you believe, I guess, in all your time in D.C. where things are at and I guess what's at stake at this point?
what's at stake is very much the way I look at it is, you know, truly, is the government there to support our families, to support our communities, or is government there to help corporations? Remember that the biggest bill, tax bill that was passed just was a huge tax giveaway to the richest 1% of the people and corporations in our country. Meanwhile, working people, middle-class families got very little, if not nothing. And so this is a government that the Trump administration and all the Republicans who continue to support it, this is a government that's working really well for the corporations and the rich, but it's not working well for the rest of us.
And talk about the place, I guess, that immigrants have in our economy. I mean, even here in Hawaii, when you look back, and we've always welcomed, immigrants to our islands.
The Native Hawaiians are the original peoples here, but everybody else in Hawaii came from someplace else. And so Hawaii very much understands the importance of immigrants as part of our community, and we celebrate diversity. That is all under attack by this president, who wants to get rid of immigrants who are here legally. He wants to impose a public charge rule so that he can try to deport them if they even at some point in their lives access public services. And I know as an immigrant myself that we all come here with the hope for a better future. And I was on the border a couple of weeks ago with Senator Tim Kaine, and we were able to talk with some of the parents, the fathers, who had come across undocumented, and they were being processed. And I asked Tim Kaine, who speaks Spanish, I said, please ask them, what do they hope for in the future? And they all said, we just want a better life for our children. We want education. That is why immigrants come to our country. You know, that's why my mother brought me to this country, so we could have a chance at a better life. And Hawaii is the better for all these immigrants coming, working hard, and being a part of our state and community. And that's what they're doing in the rest of the country.
And your colleagues know your story, you know, and mm-hmm. and what the obstacles and the challenges that you had coming over here and finding a new life in Hawaii. I don't know. Do you think that they're just cold to that, you know?
There is a very much a lack of empathy on the part of too many of my Republican colleagues. And when we were dealing with the Comprehensive Immigration Bill in 2013, that was a purposeful work for me. And working on that bill as a member of the Judiciary Committee. But so many of the Republicans would come to the floor of the Senate as we were debating the bill, saying, my father came from another country, or all of that. And then they proceeded to not vote for the Comprehensive Immigration Bill, which got bipartisan support. And in fact, one of the authors of the Comprehensive Immigration Bill was Lindsey Graham, who has completely changed his tune. So we all have immigrant roots going, and not in my case, you know, I'm first generation. For a number of my colleagues, they're only second or third generation. So the immigrant experience and the hardships is very near to their families too, and yet they don't seem to have the understanding and empathy to afford other people the opportunity to come to our country. Not to mention, people who are seeking asylum, they have a right to do that. Under the law, you can seek asylum. And that's what many of these families are doing. They come to our country seeking asylum, and there has to be a humane process and a fair process for that adjudication to happen. But the president just wants to ship everybody back as soon as possible, including children and families escaping violence.
You mentioned that you were down there visiting areas on the border. Was there anything that you were struck by?
I have visited the border a number of times, and when we went, there weren't the kind of crowded conditions that you saw pictures of, with children literally being in cells, and these are cages. They are, because they're fenced in. It wasn't as crowded, but they were certainly expecting to see more people coming. I went to a facility that at one point, it was a facility that should have housed maybe 150 people. At one time, they had 700 all squeezed there. That's where you saw all these pictures. And the Border Patrol facilities were never meant to hold people for more than just a really short period of time. So the agents there said, we're not set up to take care of all these people for longer than 48 to 72 hours, but many of them are having to stay longer. And then right now the president wants to divert FEMA money, even as we're facing a huge hurricane off the Florida, in Florida. He wants to take something like almost $160 million from FEMA that goes to disaster relief for to build more detention facilities so he can house thousands and thousands more families detained in our country as they seek asylum. There are alternatives to detention. We know that, but this is an administration that wants to detain all these people indefinitely.
And it is scary because I know Hawaii hasn't always taken positions that are in line with the Trump administration, and folks are worried about retaliation, whether it's, you know, money for rail or money for the lava inundation. You know, there's issues about upgrading the infrastructure at our military bases. You know, there are things that just need to get done. And people are worried about that money getting diverted.
Those things are getting done, and that Hawaii is getting its share of the disaster relief money. In fact, I was just on Kauai all day yesterday because they had that huge deluge that resulted in landslides and closure of Kuhio Highway, all of that. And so there was millions and millions of dollars of federal money that came for the restoration and disaster relief there. Millions of dollars in disaster relief for the Big Island, for the volcanic eruption. So we are getting the disaster relief that we need. There could always be more, but believe me, our entire delegation is on it. And then in terms of the military, Hawaii is a critical part of our national security. And the Indo-Pacific Command is the physically biggest command in the entire country, for our country. We are a very, very critical part of national security. So as I said on the Senate Armed Services Committee, I make sure that Hawaii gets the resources that we need to make sure that our military gets what they need. Including, by the way, you know, we have one of four public shipyards in our country at Pearl Harbor. And it's really important that we modernize Pearl Harbor so that all the people there can do the ship repair work in a timely, effective manner.
And they just marked a very important milestone in their history. If you're just joining the conversation, we're talking with Senator Mazie Hirono. You can join the discussion by calling us at 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. And Senator, you had mentioned, you know, you were going around to the neighbor islands. You were also on Mauna Kea.
Yes.
Talk about what you saw there and the takeaway for you.
I went to Mauna Kea to talk with the Kapuna and to talk with the young leaders there, and they adhere to Kapu Aloha, which means that it's a nonviolent protest. I went up there to listen to their voices, respect their views, and so I had a very respectful give and take with the people there, and they do have a right to civil disobedience. And I think that they, what they're showing is a model for civil disobedience and following Kapu Aloha. There shall be no violence. There shall be respectful, you know, of respectfulness, of course, to the mountain. And so they have a way of showing their civil disobedience that I think is having people recognize that they are truly sincere in their beliefs, and that's what I came away with, that they consider the mountain to be sacred, not in just a religious sense, but in a very physical way, because the mountain protects them from hurricanes, and there are the rains that comes to that island, all of that. And so they are very sincere in their beliefs. My hope is that we can resolve this this situation, if you want to call it that, in some way, but I do not have particular answers at this point. I'm hopeful that there will be a resolution.
Yeah, I know there are folks in the community that believe, you know, we're a nation of laws, and that the telescope and the scientists there, you know, have a right to access and build at this point after going through the legal challenges, you know,
yes,
in the judiciary.
Well, I adhere to the rule of law, because I think the rule of law is what distinguishes a democracy from other systems that are totally non-democratic. But I also say that sometimes the judicial system does not result in justice, and this is why people engage in civil disobedience.
And I don't know, so is it your hope then that there will be some Ho'oponopono at some point, and that there can be a way forward for both to exist on the mountain?
I hope that there's a way to resolve the situation. When I listen to the Kupuna, though, they are very committed to not having the 30-meter telescope on that mountain.
Gosh, I'm just trying to think. Anything else that you saw as you were going across the islands in your visit back home here?
I went back to the Big Island, Kona side, and I visited with the Ulu Co-op because I am a very big supporter of farm to school and agriculture in particular in Hawaii. So this is a co-op that is working to put Ulu into school lunches. And I've been supporting fresh pineapple in our school lunches, fresh poi in our school lunches. It helps the farmers, and I think it also connects us to the produce from our own state. And I think it's a lot healthier. So I visited with the Ulu Co-op. I also recently visited Waimalawa Health Center, since healthcare is important to everyone. A lot of people in our state rely on the community health centers for basic healthcare and preventive care. So Waimalawa Healthcare is one of the places that does that. And I went and visited with them. And one of the things that I found particularly interesting is that they have a Native Hawaiian health practitioner there to educate people, educate anyone who wants to learn about the medicinal properties of Native Hawaiian plants. And so they have a garden, you know, that they plant these medicinal plants and the uses of them. And I was told that by the practitioner that there is a high incidence of diabetes in the Native Hawaiian population. And if you're told that you should just not eat certain foods or whatever it is, it doesn't necessarily result in change behavior. But if you can, she said, if you can connect the cultural component to it, and there are certain plants that are that can help them, that they are much more interested and committed and motivated to make those kinds of changes. I found that to be such an interesting part of what they were offering at the Waimanalo Health Center, because as we know, traditional medicine doesn't have all the answers. And I think that these alternative healing methods are a very important component to wellness.
And, there is a lot of attention being paid to our native species, whether it's plants or animals. And I know the administration has changed policies and looking at ways to, loosen some of those protections for our endangered species. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, this is an administration that wants to eliminate just about every regulation that protects our environment or that I think gets in the way of, in my view, corporate interests. So they want to ease up on the protections for invasive species. And this is something that I particularly have worked on with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, because they have to do the research on invasive species with the beetle.
Mm-hmm.
Coffee berry borer beetle. That's a mouthful. So I've worked on those kinds of cases. But what we're seeing with the USDA Agriculture Services, you may have read that the department is trying to move their scientists off to other parts of the country outside of where they're performing their core research functions. And it was disclosed that they're doing this because they actually want the scientists in USDA to resign. And that will make it much harder for farmers all across the country to get the kind of research that they need to make sure that they can grow their crops and be free from pesticides or use and all of that. And you have a department that is supposed to be helping agriculture and farmers, and they are trying to have as many of the scientists leave as possible. That is just totally antithetical. You know, it's like backwards. And that's what's happening with this administration, that it is led by so many people in the departments who have been in their other life before they became secretaries of these departments, challenging the provisions of these departments. And now they're in charge of these departments. I think it's like, there's a saying, the fox is guarding the hen house. And that is happening in way too many departments.
Is there anything more that you and our Hawaii delegation can do to help us with the the silent invaders. You know, we're dealing with the situation now with the little fire ant. We've got it on, I think, 20 acres at Kualoa Ranch on here on Oahu. Maui is getting ready to do aerial treatment, spraying a type of pesticide because they've got an infestation of 150 acres in Nahiku. And it's so challenging because of the terrain. So this is the first time that we'll be doing this aerial treatment here in the islands. And I think, you know, some folks say it's already a lost cause for the Big Island. While we may have a chance to battle back here on Oahu and Maui and keep it off Kauai, is there something more we can do?
What we should be doing is to really strengthen the resources that go to research and development by the Department of Agriculture, for example, where a lot of these kinds of research is done. And at the state level, you have the University of Hawaii College of Tropical Agriculture. But it's going to take a number of groups working together. It's not just UH, but it is the USDA, the Department of Ag, working together to address or to find ways to deal with invasive species. We are the invasive species capital of the country in Hawaii. So it's a constant battle, but you have to fund research. And I'm afraid that at the federal level, they're cutting back on this kind of research.
Okay, we have a call coming in from Eva Beach. Eileen, you're on the air.
Hi, Senator Hirono, thank you so much for all that you're doing.
Aloha.
You were also meeting with us on the Immigration Forum last week. I was just going to ask if you could use your platform to encourage tolerance and acceptance of diversity here at home. I went to a meeting last night for one of our beaches here locally, and that same disturbing messages came through that we hear from Donald Trump supporters that you don't belong here. We were born here. And I understand that people feel disenfranchised and they don't have a vote, but it became very ugly. And it was very disappointing and very saddening because I'm hearing that it's not just a problem in Washington, D.C. on the mainland, but it was right here in our community. And I just feel like we're not accepting each other. And there was a big group of folks there that clean up that beach once, twice a month, all different ethnicities, and yet, you know, they're not appreciated because they weren't born right there. So if you could just help us along with that, I'd appreciate it.
So, Senator, how can you help to encourage tolerance and acceptance of diversity here in Hawaii?
I think that Hawaii is a state where we have very much in the not-too-recent past, that very much welcome everyone to our shores. Not without tensions, of course, but we never really outwardly started talking about everybody going back where they came from and that using that kind of very divisive language that the president utilizes. So that's one thing. And, you know, I recently read, I believe it was a New York Times article about if you want to eliminate racism, go live in Hawaii. And so we have a history and to be proud of in welcoming different people. And I think that when that kind of language is utilized, I think we need to say no. That's not how we want to be in Hawaii. That in Hawaii we want to welcome everyone. We want to be understanding. We want to be empathetic. But I think we do need to voice our disagreement in as civil a way as possible, in as non-confrontational way as possible. But that's what's happening in our country, Eileen, that somehow it's gotten to be okay. It starts at the top, where the president uses very divisive language against people that he doesn't agree with, starting with, for example, the Muslim ban. And that's why I believe that these are not normal times, and it requires all of us to be paying attention and to say that we don't agree. You could write letters to the editor, or you could do different things to say we don't agree with that kind of sentiment.
You know, Senator, you had mentioned before we sat down here and went on air that you have a way to deal with some of the stresses, because some people have maybe Trump fatigue or
yes.
just politics fatigue in general. So you have what, Trump-free Sundays?
I have Trump-less Sundays. That means that I don't watch the news on that day, and I just do whatever it is that restores my soul, because I think that there's so much incoming negativity from this administration and so many harmful policies being implemented that you need to take a break from all that. So I call it Trumpless Sunday, and I'll do other things. I'll read, or I'll do something creative, artistic. I make my own paper, for example. And so that's what I do on Trumpless Sundays. And sometimes I have to take an entire Trumpless weekend, but we need to restore our equilibrium and our souls. So I recommend it to everyone that we do that. But then we have to come back, you know, and fight back and raise our voices. So restored.
So take a deep breath, exhale.
Yes.
But it's true, because I think you kind of need to do that. You can't be operating at this level at the whole time. You'll be cranky, and you'll probably say things you might regret later. But but I think that's important.
I think so, too.
To restore that soul. We did have another call on the line, a shy caller, Scott from Palolo. He asks, any observation about the status of our rail project?
The rail project is basically a city and county project, and there's federal money that is coming to it, but the federal money I know that there's some questions being asked about how HART has proceeded, et cetera. My job was to make sure that the federal money that comes, that should come to help put rail together, is there. And so far, it is, but we all know that HART has really overrun its costs. So that's something that the HART board and basically the county is going to need to better address.
And I know this concern because there is the FBI probe, the subpoenas that have gone out, you know, looking for any criminal wrongdoing on the project. But it is a big ticket item, the largest in our municipal history. And, you know, and that at the time it was the H3, right? We saw all the
that was about
turmoil.
10 years of litigation.
Yes.
But I also know that there's massive traffic jams in on Oahu, and you have people who are having to drive and be on the freeways for hours every single day. Imagine if you live out in Kapolei or some of the other places where you have to come in to work. And this is one of the reasons that you try to have work where people live, but that's not how things are developing. And so we have massive traffic jams here pretty much 24/7. HART was intended to relieve that.
Right, to give folks from that west side an alternative way into town. If you're just joining the conversation, we are talking with Senator Mazie Hirono. You can join the discussion by calling 1-877-941-3689. Stay with us. We'll be right back after a short break.
Support for the conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programs. Mahalo to contributors Ekahi Health, Ulupono Initiative, and Impact Hub Honolulu Co-Working.
Coming Saturday, September 7th, in HPR's Atherton Studio, join me, Ray Cruz, for an evening of Latin jazz with percussionist extraordinaire Freddie Miranda Jr. This members-only event includes a pre-show reception with the band. Get your tickets today at hprtickets.org, sponsored by Amoresco.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Zippy's Restaurants, supporting farmers in Hawaii, serving fresh local lettuce and papaya and more, Hawaii-grown produce. Learn more at zippys.com.
We're back with the conversation and Senator Mazie Hirono. And Senator, you sit on a number of key committees, I think Armed Services, Natural Resources and Energy. Talk about where we sit right now with Red Hill, because water is a really important resource. We have wonderful water here, but we've got to try and balance the situation with the military and the need for those tanks.
The Navy is very aware of the concerns regarding Red Hill, and so they have test wells, et cetera, to test whether there's any leaching or leakage, and so far, not. At the same time, it is really important that we have that facility, fuel facility for our Army, military, et cetera. Yes, I share everyone's concern that our water needs to remain pristine and drinkable, and so there's a lot of monitoring that is going on. And at some point, the military may come up with some alternatives for that huge, huge storage facility. So I am in pretty constant contact with the Navy on the issue of Red Hill. I have spoken about Red Hill many times with the Secretary of Navy, Secretary Spencer. And so they are very well aware of the importance, not only of keeping the water safe and their responsibility, but to keeping the community apprised of what's going on.
And you've been to that site.
Yes.
We have not. the media is still waiting for a revisit. We were in there, I think, in the late 1980s when they opened it up to kind of bring attention to the fact that this was really an engineering marvel, civil engineering. Yes. It was incredible.
It is a huge engineering marvel, practically, I would say, on the order of Hoover Dam. It's massive, and you don't even know what it's like until you actually go to the site. Yes, I would recommend that everyone do that. At the same time, you know, I have a commitment to make sure that the military, which is very much a part of the national security for the state of Hawaii, that we are all behaving with sensitivity toward the environment, to the concerns raised by our communities. And so whichever commander comes on board, I always emphasize how important it is for them to make sure that the community is very aware of the things that they are doing that would impact the community.
And so do you advocate to people just turn out to the public hearings to learn more about what's happening there?
That's one way, and I know that the military also, there are times when they will have opportunities for the public to hear from the public, and there is an agreement relating to the Red Hill that involves our State Department of Health as well as the EPA, and there was an agreement as to what would happen with Red Hill and how we would proceed to make sure that the water is kept safe. Since then, there was a court decision that said that certain other state laws would apply, and so Navy is seeking a permit to continue to have that storage facility, but there will be continuous monitoring of that facility to make sure there's no leaching into the aquifer.
I know, I think Senator Case said he expressed some concern because I know the proposal about double lining those tanks could reduce the capacity. And, he was just mindful of the need for that fuel for the Indo-Pacific fleet.
Yes. So everyone agrees that the water must be safe for drinking. So we start with that. And then we look at the scientific information as what we need to do. I think double lining is one way, but there may be other ways to keep that facility from leaking. And right now, I am not aware that there's any leakage happening. There are all these test wells that have been bored into that area to test the water.
Right, but certainly lots of attention on that.
Yes.
We have a call coming in from Eva Beach. Stan, you have a question for the senator?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Senator, I'm the son of a Kauai sugar plantation worker and the most influential person, one of the three, I think, influential persons in my life has been Senator Inouye.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, in more ways than one, he was significant to me. And I know that he served and was respected, and although he differed strongly. In fact, I actually had positions different from the senator. I expressed it to him that were divergent, and he had that with his colleagues. But he always carried himself with a sense of decorum, with respect and dignity, although he had views that were different. What I'm thinking is the reason that maybe you view most of the Republicans and definitely the president as being evil or, forgive me, but stupid. So maybe that explains your rather coarse language and behavior. And I'm wondering, in the long run, does that represent the state of Hawaii well? And again, I differed with Senator Inouye, and I expressed that to him, but I also expressed to him the fact that he was really significant in the career that I have chosen to make Hawaii better. But just your thoughts about that.
Well, I share that goal of making Hawaii better. And I certainly do not consider my Republican colleagues either stupid or evil. We certainly disagree on a number of really major issues, including, for example, health care. You know, they want to eliminate health care and eliminate protections for people with pre-existing conditions, and that would probably involve a lot of people in Hawaii. So as I mentioned before, I work with my colleagues with whom I disagree on a number of issues. But, I've introduced bills that have been enacted into law with Deb Fisher of Nebraska, Joni Ernst of Iowa, John Bozeman of Arkansas, Mike Lee of Utah. I even introduced recently a bill that is co-sponsored by Ted Cruz of Texas. So I work with my Republican colleagues on a whole bunch of bills that we proceed in a bipartisan way. So I don't believe that anyone is evil, et cetera, but I certainly raise my voice when I disagree with them. And these are not normal times, so I say that it is really important. It is more important than ever that we speak up. And we have a president, by the way, Stan, who lies every single day. That does not promote the kind of country or Hawaii that we want.
You know, Senator Hirono, I know on women's issues with the Me Too movement, you came up and you said men need to shut up and step up. And, you know, I know when I was raised, my parents said, you don't say shut up, you know, and you don't say some other words, too. But you've really come out, and I don't know if it's because the president has said and done some outrageous things that you feel you need to do the same.
I speak very plainly. And so when I say that the president is a liar, I do not take any pleasure in that, because I think it is not normal to say that the president lies every day. But he does, and I'm not the only one who says that. And so I speak plainly. And what I hear from so many people all across the country, frankly, is that they respond to someone that is, I'm not trying to get attention, by the way. I just see and listen and study what is going on, and then I speak very plainly about it. And sometimes that means that I will say certain things that maybe nice girls don't say, but, you know, what is that, being a nice girl? You know, I'm going to advocate for the people of Hawaii and for the people of our country and for our families and for people who are literally, I will use a word, who are literally getting screwed every single second, minute, and hour of the day. And I've said to my staff, you know, if by our efforts we can reduce that number, we will be making a difference and we will be doing our jobs. I am very motivated to take the kind of positions that actually help people. And all of the bills that I've sponsored with my Republican colleagues, by the way, that have been signed into law by at least two presidents, the two most recent presidents, including this one, are intending to do that, and I will keep on speaking plainly. I'm glad that the people of Hawaii recently reelected me to another 6-year term, so I can keep doing it.
Someone said you're not a show horse, but you're a workhorse. That you really hadn't brought attention to, you know, and you I think just historically, when you look at the Democratic Party, folks have said, you know, you waited your turn because, you know, Ed Case took lots of heat when he didn't wait his turn. But, you know, some feel that, you know, maybe you've had to step up because you're just so outraged or you're footless. I don't know.
Oh, that came from last night's, yes.
The gridiron, yes.
I think that I am really outraged by the complete incoming. I mean, what president comes makes an announcement that he's going to ban Muslims from our country, resulting in all these lawsuits, including, by the way, the first lawsuit was brought by the Attorney General of the state of Hawaii. Just about every executive order that this president issues, practically every administration decision that cuts back on support for our environment, that provides due process for immigrants and all that, they all have been challenged in the courts. Why? Because he doesn't think that the rule of law applies to him. The rule of law applies to everybody. So all these dozens and dozens of lawsuits that have been filed are would not need to be filed if he would follow the rule of law. So there you go. And lots of organizations are having to use their resources. The NAACP, the ACLU, all these organizations are having to fight immigrant advocacy groups to fight these laws. And much of the time, the states, the courts step in and sustain the challenges to what the administration is doing. And that should tell us something. That should tell us that one, the independence of the courts is critical to our democracy, and two, a lot of the actions by this administration are not supportable under the law.
We have a couple calls from the Big Island. One shy caller feels that the Big Island is less prioritized than other islands in terms of environmental issues. I think we talked about the little fire ant, the concerns about the Cokie frog situation there. So how do you respond to that?
This is why I have worked very closely with the U.S. Department of Agriculture to support the research and the development they have to do. And with the, for example, the attacks on the our coffee, you know, the coffee berry borer beetle, that took a lot of research. That took a commitment from the USDA to put some resources into that. Constant research that has to be done with all kinds of other invasive species. So that's what I do at the federal level to bring to support funding for this kind of research and development to help our farmers and to help our communities.
We have another call from the Big Island. Wiley?
Yes.
What's on your mind?
Hello. I have Hawaiian ancestry, and I'm a retired technician from one of these observatories. I worked 18 years at one of the Mauna Kea observatories, and I want to ask the senator, she's met with the so-called protectors. Has she ever met with the executives of the astronomy community for the observatories on Mauna Kea?
Yes, I have. And that is why I have heard from both sides. It's not as though one side is wrong or one side is right, but they have very specific positions. They have their positions. And for the observatory, yes, we went through a legal process, a pretty lengthy legal process. And so the rule of law says that telescope should be built. But at the same time, I also understand why there is disagreement as to that result and people exercising their right to civil disobedience. That's why I am hopeful that we can resolve this in some way, but I do not have the answer to it at the moment. And after when I went up to Mauna Kea, I also met with the mayor of the Big Island, Mayor Kim, because he has been charged by the governor to help resolve the situation. So I met with Harry, and I know that he has been meeting with various people to bring about a resolution. I am very hopeful that happens. But as I say, there are strongly held views, heartfelt views on both sides of the issue.
Well, we've got about 3 minutes. I don't know, Senator, what else do you want to talk about?
Oh, well, homelessness is a huge issue everywhere. And I recently visited Kahauiki, which is the project on Sand Island. And the intention is to provide homes for families. And that was the focus, homeless families who were in transitional housing. And this is a great project that says that there should be a community. And so it's not just residences, but there's opportunities for people who live in these homes to get jobs. So they're, you know, buy-in from corporations to provide jobs. I met with one woman who was working at the Palama. There's a little Palama store, market store, at Kahauiki, and she was living in a transitional shelter, and she is so happy to live in this project. When I visited with the mayor of Kauai, Derek Kawakami, he said that he is very aware of the model of Kahoiki and that he is doing a similar project on Kauai. This project has been visited by the national head of Head Start, because one of the major aspects, criteria for making Kahoiki a successful community is to make sure that there's childcare and early education programs there. And so the head of Head Start, national head of Head Start, has visited Kahoiki. They have had visitors from Colorado, all of that. I think Kahoiki is a model for how we can provide housing for homeless families.
And we should mention that that village was really modeled after the plantation housing.
Yes, very much so. Yes.
And, you know, Duane Carrizo, his roots were on were on a plantation, came
shout
up with
out,
that idea.
Shout out to Duane, who is a can-do kind of guy.
Absolutely.
And so I was so gratified to visit a facility like this that is creating opportunities and a head over the and a roof over the heads of all of these families, so the kids can go to school, all of that. And you know, that's not the solution to all of our homeless problems, but I think it's an approach that is going to work. And I'm glad that Derek is following up on it in Kauai. So, you know, Hawaii has a lot to teach the rest of the country. And as you say, the plantations were set up as pretty much, you know, communities unto themselves. So, but it's like Back to the Future, and I'm glad that mainland entities and states are and leaders are coming to see this as a model for them.
So let's find a way to be innovative. It means going back to our history, our roots.
Yes.
To find solutions.
And the other thing that with Kahoiki is that so many people have volunteered their time, and they've donated all kinds of things.
Right. It takes a village.
Terrific.
It takes a village. We would like to thank our guest, Senator Mazie Hirono, for giving up an hour of her time to reach out across the state. And we'd like to thank you, the listener, for joining us on today's show. And if your call didn't make it on the air during today's discussion, contact the TalkBack line and leave your comments. Call 808-792-8217. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us on Tuesday for more of the conversation.